in front of, and they're like kids. They're like 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds. They're fumbling about. They don't know what to do. And each and every one of them comes back and says, that man is God. You know, what is this? You know, it's like, you know, he's a representation of God on earth. You know, what can we say? You know, he's like something out of the prophets.
Look, whatever they said,
yeah.
The point is, it was not... It was undeniable.
It was undeniable. That's the thing.
And of course, his enemies talked about this. It's sure. Not even that, you know, the yeah, people who liked him.
As we said about Henri Kissinger, you know, he said he's doing things that we can't understand.
Okay.
He talks about jihad, and he talks about heaven and martyrdom and God. And right. What's that got to do with global policy and,
right.
you know, foreign relations? And right. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This is the point. Rely on God.
Exactly.
Trust in God's power if you are connected to God, and believe me, even if you're a sinner.
Even if you're a sinner, that's right.
Okay?
Yes.
This is even if you're a sinner.
Yes, of course we are.
Because Allah's mercy is, you know, has no limit.
Yeah, it's open to all.
So if you sincerely and, you know, with a feeling of, and with this idea that, and this attitude that you go to God and you say, listen, I know I'm a sinner.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Confess your all.
You know, I'm not, I have nothing,
yeah.
you know, to show for.
Show for it.
Yeah. All I need is your mercy and your support. Sure. You think Allah is not going to support you? You think Allah is not going to support you? Of course he's going to support you.
Of course he promised he would.
Okay. So what I'm trying to say here, that this is feasible. This is reality. It's not some pie in the sky.
No, it's not.
Okay. Again, I repeat, they keep saying, oh, well, he was a very strong person. Why would he? Well, we don't have the capacity. We'll raise your capacity.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the whole point of life, is to raise your capacity.
You remind me now of this Egyptian correspondent. What's his name? He was...
Hassanein, Haikal.
Haikal, thank you.
Yeah, no, he's more than a journalist. He's like an intellectual.
Intellectual. Right. And he said, I asked the question to the imam. You know, he's sitting in this small room. There's only one part of the wall is wallpapered. That's the part they asked the imam, just please sit there so we can take a nice picture of you on the camera. I'm sure that's the only reason why they put him on that particular position. All these guys, and as you say, this big intellectual is sitting there, and he says, I asked the imam about, you know, the running of the affairs of state, the economy, and all that sort of thing. And the imam comes back and says, read Imam Ali. Read Nahj al-Balagha. And he said, I came back with 3 khutbas of Imam Ali. And only Ali was swimming around in my head and nothing else.
Exactly.
So there we go.
Exactly. You have the famous instructions to Malak Ashtar. We've mentioned this many times in different programs.
Sure.
And this is the point.
Yeah.
The point is that Islam, what is the central message of Islam? Is rely on God.
God. Exactly.
Trust in God. Okay, now they have that on the dollar, in God we trust.
Yes, yes.
But they don't.
They don't.
Okay.
No, in trust
right.
is it, the opposite.
Right.
It's okay. Satan.
They're pharaohs.
Yes. They can't say that, we trust Satan.
Right.
They can't say that. It doesn't sound good on the back
actually,
of a greenback.
Satan will always come with through the door
of God. It doesn't look right, you know. I trust Iblis on the back of the greenback. I can't see that happening. You know, right. God, yeah. I mean, God's good.
Right. No. Who's going to deny that?
Who's going to deny that? You see, this is the problem. But you're right. You're right.
It has to do with really doing it, not just mouthing the words.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know.
Sure.
Trying to, you know, outmaneuver the stock market in order to, you know, make a living.
Because exactly.
You know, you have to trust God, even in difficult times.
Of
I mean, the point is in difficult times.
In difficult times, that's the point. Right? In hardship.
When you've overthrown, you know, the peacock throne and...
Yes, exactly.
And the whole world is going against
you.
And they're like, hey, we're going to bomb you. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You're like, hey, you know, America hech qalati namiko.
In God we trust.
No, and he says, America can't do a damn thing.
Yeah, it can't do a damn thing. Exactly.
So this is the lesson from Imam. As the other things we discussed about this great man, every aspect of what we saw in him, and we saw him.
Sure.
This is not something that
we saw him.
You know, alhamdulillah, this was one of the great blessings in our life. Allah allowed us to see him. It was all lessons. And they've stayed with us, and inshallah they will stay with us for the rest of our lives, and we have to pass them on.
Sure.
We don't have an excuse on the Day of Judgment.
Exactly. Thank you. On that note, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I thank you very much for that enlightening discussion. I hope our listeners benefited from it. Of course, the Imam is a lesson for all times until the Day of Judgment, and we must take stock of his wisdom. But I thank our listeners and just have to say, Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining a very controversial and touchy topic. And it is a question that often comes up in the minds of people, especially non-Muslims. And that question is regarding the relationship between Islam and violence. Nobody likes violence, and people expect religion to be non-violent, obviously because they think that God is very merciful and he's kind, and therefore the religion that he sends should also be kind and merciful religion, a non-violent religion. Maybe this is the underlying line of thinking in the minds of people. Expect religion to be something non-violent, essentially non-violent and peaceful. And obviously this is an assumption which is deeply influenced by the prevalent interpretation of Christianity, which is common today. Aside from overlooking the historical factors which led to this interpretation of Christianity, we don't want to get into that. But we can examine this question and answer it in a number of different manners, in a number of different ways. And one way that we can examine that is this, and say that this word violence is a word which has a lot of, has been imbued with a lot of negative connotations, obviously. In order to answer this question, you can give an example. Let's say that you go to the doctor's office, right? Doctor's office, and the doctor, you say you have pain, in a certain part of your body, and the doctor says we have to take an MRI. The doctor takes an MRI, and God forbid, he comes to the conclusion that there's a tumor in you, and it has to be removed, right? It has to be removed through surgery. So you go to surgery, obviously, and the doctor, you're there, and the doctor, let's say, he picks up a knife. What would happen if this patient, or you as a patient, were to jump up and scream, "Hey, why are you being so violent towards me?" Everybody would obviously laugh, right? See that this is, in this situation, right, where we are forced to use this knife and cut you open and take out this tumor if you want to live. Right? Similarly, Islam views certain individuals in society as a disease, which an incurable disease, which should be removed. And this removal can only occur through punishing them, or even in certain cases, through their death. And if this is necessary in order for the general spiritual and worldly health of society to be retained, then this is necessary. And you can't necessarily characterize such actions such punishments or such reactions towards such individuals by religion as being necessarily violent. We could equally characterize them as being preventive, as being defensive. Right? Let's say that somebody walked into your house with the intention of killing you, and you picked up a gun and you killed him. Right? Would we characterize this as self-defense or violence? Right. So these words with these connotations in order to portray Islam as a violent religion is definitely unbecoming and incorrect. Thank you for joining us on The Key. We're looking at Islam and violence. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Aga, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagin.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Let me spend a little bit of time discussing the verses from Surah Taha, verses 77 up to verse 91. I think is very relevant to us and the anniversary of the revolution. This is part of the story of Musa and Banu Israel and Fir'aun. The story of Musa and Fir'aun and Musa and Banu Israel, the children of Israel, has been mentioned in the Holy Quran many times. In each section, a certain part of it is more elaborate, is more extended. Certain other parts are either skipped or not mentioned or mentioned briefly. In this chapter, there are other parts mentioned as well. The parts I read start from the point where لَقَدْ أَوْحَيْنَا إِلَىٰ مُوسَىٰ أَنْ أَسْرِ بِعِبَادِي فَاضْرِبْ لَهُمْ طَرِيقًا فِي الْبَحْرِ يَبَسًا. We revealed upon Musa, gave him a message, أَنْ أَسْرِ بِعِبَادِي, travel with my ibad, with my slaves, Banu Israel, at night. Isra is traveling at night. فَضْرِبْ لَهُمْ, and you will get to a bahr. This is, again, it's very concise. In other chapters, it talks about this section, what happened, them leaving the city, and then getting there, and then the conversations between Banu Israel and Musa, and then seeing Fir'aun come, and then, this is a concise version, this part of it is very concise. فَضْرِبْ لَهُمْ, then when you get there, you open a path in the bahr. According to the other verses that we have in other chapters regarding this, that apparently was not something that he was told initially. The wahy came to leave the city. Then when they got there, the command was to stay there. They waited there. Fir'aun came. Banu Israel started to panic. They're seeing Fir'aun. They think they're going to be ruined. There's nowhere to go. At that point, God tells Musa to touch the Bahar, that sea, with his staff, and a path open. فَضْرِبْ لَهُمْ طَرِيقًا فِي الْبَحْرِ يَبَسَ. This is going to be a dry path. You don't have to worry what you're stepping into. And لَا تَخَافُ دَرَكًا وَلَا تَخْشَى. You should not have any fear of any fall, any pit, and you should not have any worry. خَوْف in خَشْيَة, relatively the same term. Some details, I want to skip on that. So basically, Fir'aun, Musa took Banu Israel, based on God's revelation, God's message to him. They crossed the Bahr, the sea. فَأَتْبَعَهُمْ فِرْعَوْنُ بِجُنُودِهِ. Fir'aun, with his army and military, followed them. فَغَشِيَهُمْ مِنَ الْيَمِّ مَا غَشِيَهُمْ. The sea covered them. What of the sea covered them, covered them. Okay, in other words, they drowned. وَأَضَلِّ فِرْعَوْنُ قَوْمَهُ وَمَا هَدَى. And Fir'aun misled his people, and he did not guide them. Up to this point, this is a summary. Now, before this verse, Musa and Harun going to Fir'aun, and then what happened there, all of that is discussed. But here, this is a summary of the escape and the release, the point where Banu Israel, after generations of being chained, being enslaved, being mistreated, living under a government that suppresses their religion, their religious identity, abuses them, kills them for their views, for their belief, after so long generations have been struggling there, finally they're relieved. Who relieved them? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, through a messenger, Musa. In a most miraculous way. Okay. I want to pause here, draw a parallel and comparison to the revolution, to this. We believe generally that anything that happens in the world is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. His will is manifesting. His mashi'ah, ma yasha'. Anytime we see anything, we should say, MashaAllah, this is what God willed, this is what God wanted. Everything is like that. There are certain times, however, that, as the instance of Banu Israel, that God Himself says, His hand for us is more visible. And He calls them Ayyamullah, the day of Allah. In other words, it's so bright and so clear that God did this, that it's like daytime, it's that clear. As opposed to nighttime, where things happen, you just don't see it. When it's pitch black, things are happening, things are moving, the sun is moving, the earth is moving, it's pitch black, you don't see. There's certain times that that's more evident. The revolution, after the entirety of the Muslim world is in shackles, in chains, suppressed, the clergy of Muslimin, from whatever sect that's actually remnants of the teachings of the Prophet, be it Sunni or Shia, they're all under the control, the authority, the iron fist of the colonialist kafir powers of the world. Whether it's Azhar in Egypt, whether it is the Hausa in Najaf, the Hausa in Qum, the clergy schools and the clergy in Turkey, the clergy in wherever you can imagine, it's all under the authority and in shackles provided and created by the colonialists. The cities of Islam, Mecca, Medina, under a British puppet, in other words, under the authority of the British. Al Saud represented the British. And later the Americans. This is how Muslimin were living. Israel, the Zionist government, officially took that land, even kicked all the Muslimin out, killed many of them, and said, we're even changing the name of this land to Israel. The rest of it, through puppet governments, all Muslimin throughout the world, now under the control and authority of kuffar. Their religion is being attacked in so many different ways. The center of the Sunni Islamic government, which was the Ottoman Empire, the center of it was current-day Turkey. The clergy could not wear their clergy clothes. The women had to remove their hijab. Their script was changed. They had Arabic script, just like Iran does, just like Pakistan does. We use Arabic script. They changed that to Western script. Now, Turkish people, most of them, they cannot read their own Turkish works prior to the period when the colonialists. Hijabs were removed in Iran forcefully. All the rules of God were fought against. This is what was happening to all Muslimin worldwide. In one part of the Muslim lands, for all Muslimin, the shackles were removed. People were freed. Starting with that part. And that was very much clearly miraculous and divinely guided. Very, very evident. Don't hear it from me. Don't take it from me. Go back and find whatever documentaries. Everyone is caught by surprise. Then when you read the details of who did what did Imam Khomeini say, what did he do, what steps did he take, what did people do, how could this have happened in this way without a divine guidance that is guiding the mind of the leader and those involved in it? That's another for another time. This was very miraculous. Clearly Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed. What I'm emphasizing on, I keep saying all Muslimin. When the revolution succeeded, again, go back and read that. All Muslimin were extremely happy. They all saw it as the victory of Islam at that time. Everyone, Shia, Sunni. In a matter of days, the Palestinians, they came to the Islamic Republic, met with the leaders. The Israeli embassy was changed into a Palestinian embassy. Right when the revolution succeeded, the Israeli embassy was taken out. We don't have such a country. There's no such government. There's no embassy. They had to leave. And when the Palestinians came, the embassy was given to them. That was their embassy, and it still is. Palestinians came very happy. Pakistan was the first government, I think the next day, second day after the revolution succeeded, recognized the ambassador in Pakistan, gave a talk. I think it was broadcasted on the television. It was in Farsi. And they were the first to recognize the Islamic Republic of Iran. And you can see the joy in everyone, all these Muslimin that are getting that news. Everyone is extremely happy. Why? Because they're all mu'minin. They all see this as a victory of Islam.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
سيوتو
شومان يعني
بازار What it feels like to be sick. You feel sluggish, fatigued, or lose your appetite, and perhaps become more sensitive to pain and cold. Many times, people can treat themselves at home with self-care and homemade remedies. Other times, a trip to the doctor does the trick. But even then, some ailments require more advanced interventions for diagnosis and therapies provided by hospitals. This is where medical devices come in handy. The health sector is mainly dependent on the accuracy and zero failure of advanced medical technology to get the job done. Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Adema and welcome to another edition of Bozor. This time, we're going to take you through Iran's high-tech medical device productions. We wanted to see who the big players in this specialized market are and check out their activities in the medical health sector. Plus, we wanted to see why this market continues to burgeon and uncover how scientific advancements are contributing to the national economy. Let's start the show. Our quest for answers led us on a journey to the Science and Research Park of Isfahan, where we visited Behyar Sanat-e Sepahan. It was first established over two decades ago, and now manufactures over 80 types of high-tech medical equipment and products. Its products cover a range of medical devices like hospital furniture, surgical tables, and lighting systems. But its main claim to fame is its advanced nuclear technology, such as the medical linear accelerator. This machine is commonly used for radiation treatments for cancer patients by delivering high-energy X-rays or electrons to the region of a patient's tumor. It's worth mentioning that this device costs roughly $3 to $4 million in foreign markets. This company can manufacture the linear accelerator at a third of this price. Plus, 90% of the device components are homegrown in Isfahan province. This company also makes other types of nuclear medical technology, such as the U-arm and ceiling-mounted radiation therapy equipment. But that's not all. They manufacture security and inspection systems used in airports, such as X-ray machines and handheld metal detectors as well. Developing indigenous technology of its kind has saved the country millions of dollars on imports and has benefited many patients so far. It might be interesting to know that the technology for creating radiation therapy devices has been generally monopolized by the United States, Britain, and China. Iran is the fourth country in the world to be able to domestically manufacture such complex and sensitive nuclear technology. And this is all thanks to massive advancements in Iran's research and academic circles. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This knowledge-based firm employs over 500 engineers and specialists, such as medical physicists, oncologists, and dosimetrists, among others. This firm also collaborates with the National Atomic Energy Organization, the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology, Ministry of Health, and Isfahan University of Medical Sciences. Dependability and accuracy of its products are key components in delivering high-quality performance. As such, this knowledge-based manufacturer makes its products along international guidelines for quality and safety. It has received its certifications and production permits from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and National Medical Device Directorate, among many more. As part of its future vision, this firm is eyeing neighboring markets for exports, which are currently facing high demands for linear accelerators. Their ultimate goal is to elevate the quality of lives of people through creating technology that treats ill patients. The products of this company are vital for the treatment of cancer. Due to the cruel sanctions, many restrictions have been placed on Iran's purchase and imports of this equipment and its supporting services. This knowledge-based firm sees the sanctions as an opportunity for growth and advancing scientific knowledge inside the country. Now, medical devices are considered a fundamental component of the healthcare system, and their benefits continue to increase with the advancements of scientific discovery. Iran is globally ranked fourth in the engineering of 1,000 of medical devices, and this sector is thriving in the country. But you don't have to take my word for it. Let's check out some statistics and figures in this field. Domestic medical device production has grown by 213% since 2019, reducing imports by 10% in the same period. Plus, exports of medical devices are up by 10% this year. Over 2,000 different types of medical devices and supplies are domestically produced under the license of the Ministry of Health based on EU standards. That's all based on figures from the Medical Equipment Office at the Ministry of Health. Based on the Medical Device Directorate, there are roughly 1,000 medical device manufacturers nationwide. These companies provide 30% of revenues in the domestic medical device market. The directorate also says export revenues were well over $24 million this year, but the goal is to generate nearly $1 billion in revenues in the coming years. These statistics have been largely credited to governmental support for the development of knowledge and research companies. Several policies have been implemented over the years to help in businesses in their efforts to create new products and increase their exports. The Ministry of Science, Research and Technology recently launched a focus plan to help companies with international standardizations. This program assesses the compatibility of the Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets under the World Trade Organization standards. The plan aims to attract foreign investments. Government officials and industry participants say it's a significant step towards keeping high-tech medical devices and products relevant in the international arena. Iran exports its medical devices and products to numerous countries across the globe. But scores of people from abroad also visit Iran to benefit from the cutting-edge technologies and the excellent medical service. This is called medical tourism. The National Center for Developing Health Tourism says Iran has the potential to earn $7 billion annually from this sector. These days, medical tourism is considered a booming industry as some 24 million patients travel for medical treatments around the globe every year. Patients Without Borders Publishing Group puts the global value at around $90 billion. And Iran is a major destination for health tourism in the region because of the rapid investment in healthcare infrastructure in order to satisfy surging demands. Iran's two popular medical tourist destinations are Tehran and Mashhad. Other popular destinations include the city of Shiraz and Isfahan, but the coronavirus outbreak has significantly reduced the number of travelers. Industry participants say medical tourism is a win-win opportunity both for the country and foreign patients. This is because Iwan offers affordable and quality treatment services. While many visit the country for cosmetic surgery, Iwan is also known for its organ transplants, heart and neurosurgeons, among other life-saving medical treatments. The government has set goals to increase annual medical travelers to around 2 million over the next 4 years. Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, Iwan hosted a record-breaking 600,000 medical travelers in 2019. That's according to the Medical Tourism Department at the Ministry of Health. The ministry says these tourists generated over $1 billion in foreign currency. Simply put, wheat is part of the grass family. Some have argued that wheat domesticated mankind, bringing humans away from the colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle and settling them permanently next to their fields. It is also said that wheat is responsible for the agricultural revolution. It has supplied the calories that made it possible for the world's population to race toward 8 billion people. Presently, wheat is grown on more land areas across the world than any other food crop. This week, we will venture through the vast agriculture industry. We wanted to see how its products are linked to the booming food sector and uncover why it is so important to the economy. So let's get started. Our quest for answers took us to Jor-A Company. It was established nearly 4 decades ago and specializes in producing flour. This flour mill has massive production halls, which houses the latest machinery used in this business. Everything coming out of the flour mill is inside each grain of wheat, and none of it is wasted. Anything that is not used for human consumption is used for animal feed. It all starts with the wheat that is brought to the mill. Wheat that enters the facilities is sampled and tested before anything else is done. It is analyzed for moisture, gluten, and other characteristics. If it meets the standards, then it is taken to be stored. The miller's job is to separate the grain into different parts. Inside each grain is flour, bran, and germ. This is a gradual process that involves lots of sieving and sifting using giant machines in a closed-circuit process. The second stage, after crushing wheat into coarse fragments, is to add moisture, and it is stored in a separate area for 12 hours. This stage prepares the wheat for further sifting to separate bran and fine flour and is tested again for particular characteristics. Now it is ready for the final grinding phase, where it will be sifted some more. Back in the day, these processes used to be done by stone presses, and it was much faster. It might have taken 10 minutes to make stone grout flour. But with modern mills, the grinding process might take over an hour to complete. Different components of wheat are separated and later recombined to make different blends of flour, which might include bran as well. The final product is either white and bran or wholemeal flour. At this stage, it is finally ready for packaging and distribution. Over the years, this company has expanded its production such that now it produces 12 times more flour on a daily basis compared to when it started out. The production line uses state-of-the-art machinery that has been imported from Germany and Italy to get the job done. An important aspect of quality production is the different types of massive storage silos, as well as the raw material this company uses. Having a clear vision for production is also key in maintaining quality, but that's easier said than done. This company believes that having a bright plan for the future and an outline of steps to execute such a plan is critical to a smooth mass production. The mill produces flour along the lines of exports and adheres to national and international standards for production, safety, and quality. Producing the highest quality of products to satisfy its customers is, of course, its main priority. This company has overcome numerous obstacles in order to enjoy its many achievements over the years. One such a hurdle in its journey has been the U.S.-imposed economic sanctions, which has hindered many exporting processes for the businesses. Now, a lot of work and effort goes into farming wheat. The right location, soil conditions, seeds, germination, water, and so much more all make up the ingredients for a good harvest. Over the years, the government has implemented several plans and schemes to help support farmers and wheat productions nationwide. So at the present time, how is the wheat production like in the country? Around 6 million hectares of land across the country are used for farming. That is a 2.5 million hectare increase in land area used to plant crops compared to previous years. About a third of wheat fields in Iran are irrigated and the rest is rain-fed, which makes these crops vulnerable to rainfall variation. That's all according to the National Foundation of Wheat Growers. In March 2020, the government announced a scheme to purchase nearly 75% of domestic wheat productions at guaranteed prices. The goal was to reduce reliance on imports for domestic consumption. However, farmers thought that the government purchased wheat brought them little profit. As a result, some farmers opted to sell their wheat for animal feed at a higher price instead. So the government increased its purchase price to make up for the deficits. Wheat production has witnessed many ups and downs over the years. This year, farmers are dealing with droughts and pests such as locusts, as well as an increase in the cost of fertilizers and seeds. Consequently, there has been a 30% decrease in wheat harvest this year. In order to remedy the situation, the government has granted permission to import wheat and increase the production of seeds as well. Wheat is believed to be an inseparable part of our everyday food, as it can be used for various meals like pasta, bread, cookies, and so much more. It's considered a strategic crop because it can be transformed into different products with added value, which increases profits. In the world today, the food industry is worth billions and is growing at a rapid pace. As you probably know, the national food production is heavily dependent on productions in the agriculture industry. The food industry is the biggest contributor to the national economy. Going off the figures from Iran's Customs Administration, this sector makes up over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. This industry is almost entirely privately owned too, and for those who want to enter this sector, it offers a world of opportunities. The food sector also holds the largest share in creating jobs in the country and accounting for around 50% of the country's entire industrial employment. That's according to the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. Over 5 million tons of agricultural and food products were exported from Iran in the first 8 months of this year. Based on data from the Ministry of Agriculture, these exports raked in roughly $3.3 billion. It might be interesting to know pistachios top the exporting charts in terms of value. Dairy products, sweets, poultry, and aquaculture, as well as a diverse range of agricultural products, are some of the main items exported this year. Iran exports these items to numerous market destinations across the world, including countries in Europe, Asia, and South America. All right, everyone, it's time for me to take you out on the field to walk you through the production procedure of a material that we use on a day-to-day basis. I won't tell you any further. Let's begin the adventure. One of the major innovations of the past centuries has been the introduction and wide adaptation of plastics for many day-to-day applications. The mass use of plastic started in the 1950s and has steadily grown ever since. Today, more than 300 million tons of plastic are produced worldwide every year. The popularity of plastic is due not only to its low production costs, but also its numerous practical characteristics, including its low weight, acid resistance, and flexibility. There is so much more that can be said about this industry. But now, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear colleague out on the field for an exciting adventure.
Traditional medicine or modern medicine? This is among the most frequently asked questions. At the end of this episode, you'll definitely get to an answer to this question, as we're going to walk you through an Iranian pharmaceutical manufacturer dubbed Bouali Darur, which produces a range of traditional medicine. While traditional medicine uses traditional therapeutic methods, Bouali Darur says it constantly conducts research and development to come up with new medications and boost the effectiveness of its medicines. Practitioners of traditional medication say one of the proven advantages of herbal medicine is their zero side effect aspect. Bouali Darur says their drugs are produced purely from herbs and will not lead to any serious side effects. Iranian pharmaceutical firm says it's yet to reach its full capacity in the production of traditional medicine. It says it seeks to produce more drugs for more diseases, and at the same time, it aims to present its products in the global market. Bouali Darur takes its name from renowned 10th century Iranian physician Avicenna, who is hailed internationally as the pioneer of traditional medication. Bouali Darur says it works on an hourly basis to improve the quality of its products, with the ultimate goal of promoting the acceptance of traditional medicine among the public.
Final portion of the program, let's take a brief look at a few interesting bits of news and trends in the medical industry. Ever wanted to go for a run, but felt that it was just too tiresome? Well, a group of Iranian researchers have invented a wearable device that helps people run or walk long distances with less pain or tiredness. The device is a lightweight harness worn around the waist and legs with localized springs. The embedded spring stores some energy consumed during activity and later transfers it to the legs without the use of an engine or battery. The developers say it has the ability to increase running efficiency by 8%, making running feel much easier. Recently, there have been numerous developments in Iran's healthcare systems. One trend we've been seeing in the last couple of years is the rise in electronic health services that was spurred by the coronavirus pandemic. Several online platforms have been developed over the past 2 years. These platforms offer non-emergency online doctor visits, counseling, and therapy. Generally, there has been many positive outcomes arising from the mass use of digital health tools during the pandemic. Online care helped relieve the system from great pressure. Iranian medical companies are constantly creating new products streamlined into the market. An Iranian biotechnology company is taking steps towards producing a kit for diagnosing congenital and genetic disorders. The kit analyzes 26 sites of repetitive short sequences of the genome from embryonic samples. It performs rapid prenatal diagnosis of chromosomal disorders, including Down syndrome, Turner syndrome, and Edwards syndrome, just to name a few. The developers say the kit is more accurate and can detect more disorders than its foreign counterparts.
Finally,
Finally, that covers our program for today. Let us know what you think by sharing your thoughts via email. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe and bye-bye.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Hello, dear listeners, my brothers and sisters from every single corner in the world, wherever you are. I hope everything is fine and you're doing well. This is IRB English Radio and I am Asma. I have the privilege to be your host. Today I'm at your service and I'm going to share some priceless moments with you. Here with us, we have a very dear guest, Miss Ahmadi, and I would be very happy if she introduces herself to us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamu alaikum to you and to dear listeners and followers of this noble program.
Yes.
I'm Sayyida Fatima Ahmadi, the lecturer of the university, and my studies is around the social studies and women's studies. I'm here at your service, and we will be talking about the importance role of the women in development of a country.
Yes, that's very true. Welcome to your program. We're here with Muslim Lady. Okay, before we proceed, I would like to join everyone in celebrating the Revolution Day, which is just around the corner. May Allah grant our country the blessings of peace and stability and preserve our unity and its strength. So, happy Revolution Day to all the Iranian out there. And just for those who have no idea about Iranian Revolution, I would tell you just the very gist of the story. About 43 years ago, on February 1979, Iranian people put an end to the monarchic system and a new era of Islamic Republic has started in the history of Iranian nation. From that day on, every year we celebrate all the labors our heroes undertook to bring us honor and independence. So that's the whole story. Now, speaking of revolution in this program, which is generally concerned with Muslim Lady and her issues, reminds us of great women in history. Now, we have heard a lot about mothers, sisters, and wives. I mean, women in different roles who shouldered such burdens during the revolution and afterwards during the war. They actually acted like real heroes. Shall we just talk about the role of women before and after the revolution?
First, I have to thank you because of this beautiful and brief introduction of the story of the revolution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Of course, today we are going to talk about the development and the role of the women in development of the countries, and especially our own country, Iran. You know, before that, let's start to talk about the issue of the importance of research about the historical role of women in the economy. Because women make up half of the population, they can play an important role in the country's economy. It can be boldly said that without women's participation in the economy, development and construction are not possible. Especially since women entered the field of economic activities earlier than men. And in early societies, women have a more prominent role in the economy.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Very funny.
From the very, very far history, we see that women's role even was more prominent than men.
So they were the pioneers
in
economy.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
Let's go for a little break and then we'll be back. Thank you for listening to us and giving your ears and attention. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
you're listening to IRB English Radio, and this is a Muslim lady. We're talking about the role of women in history and in society, the burdens they shoulder throughout the history.
You know, in developing countries, most women work in agriculture and related industries, in addition to domestic work, and work about 16 to 17 hours a day, and are directly involved in wealth creation. You know, in other words, we can say that raising children by women is a kind of creating work wealth.
So they have double of job to
do. Exactly. Exactly. Therefore, considering this important issue, it is very appropriate to conduct studies in this regard and to take basic steps for the growth and promotion of women and the elimination of their problems.
So we talked about the role of women in economy. This might come to our mind that is it possible to ignore the role and work of women in a society? Now, there comes a question that tells, what elements are important in each country's socioeconomic growth?
Well, you know, although a country's potential for socioeconomic growth and development depends to a large extent on natural resources such as soil, water, mines, and raw materials, and the amount of investment, most development economists believe that what really characterizes and flows socioeconomic development is the human resources of that country, not its capital and natural resources. You know, the capital and natural resources of the country are subordinate factors of production, while human beings are the factors that exploit capital and natural resources, build socioeconomic organizations, and regulate development. The importance of the role of women is clarified here. A very big question about this role is the
role of women in economy.
Exactly, exactly. Here we can say that the role of the women are clarified here because, you know, as half of human resources who are women, and women are not only the subject and goal of any kind of development, but also the agent of advancing its important goals. They also, in terms of achieving goals, more equitable distribution of incomes and increasing the well-being and standard of living of families, will have positive effect. Of course, without achieving the necessary skills, knowledge and technologies and their optimal use, economic progress and development is not possible.
So we can see that the role of woman is such an idealistic and very much big of a role she has in society and in economic growth. As we talked about the role of women in economy and in society, and we talked that she is undertaking so much of roles and so much of responsibilities, we could ask that, what is the role of women in socioeconomic situation of our country, Iran? Many things has changed before the revolution until now. We see a big difference in women before the revolution and then after the revolution.
You know, it's nice to say that, you know, from the very beginning, the women had role in the development of the country from the very beginning, even before the revolution.
Exactly.
But, you know, this role became so much effective after the revolution because of the most and effective attention that the government put on women.
And they have more freedom to act.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, the way was clarified because now they know their exact role in the family and in the society.
Yes.
Therefore, they could interfere in both parts. And, you know, the leaders of this government ask them that, please stay and take care of your role in the family because the children that you're raising and the husband that you're taking care of are the most important part of the society.
Yes.
But you can have some role and take part in the society in a very beautifully, under a very special Islamic rules. They could have these two roles together and more effective after the revolution.
They can do both simultaneously.
Yeah, exactly.
Millions of Iranians across the country have begun 10 days of celebrations marking the anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution that put an end to the monarchy of the Pahlavi regime in Iran. You are listening to IRIB English Radio and the dialogue between Sister Asma and Sister Ahmadi on the status of women in the revolution.